President Trump faces a 5 p.m. deadline today to decide whether he'll have his lawyers participate in remaining impeachment inquiry proceedings, including Monday's presentation of evidence against him by the House Judiciary Committee.
Our Friday Politics Roundtable joins us now, Sahil Kapoor, who's national political reporter for Bloomberg News. Hi, Sahil.
Great to join you.
And Beth Fooey is senior politics editor for NBC News and MSNBC. Hi, Beth.
Hey there.
And Beth, how do you expect Monday to play out as the House Judiciary Committee holds this hearing of the presentation of evidence?
Well, we're still waiting to see the list of witnesses that are going to step forward to the committee. But, you know, basically we know what the evidence is. Adam Schiff released a lengthy report several days ago that outlined everything that they had come up with through their investigation, through all those many hearings that so many people watched at home from various civil servants and others who stepped forward to explain what they knew about President Trump's overtures to Ukraine around this, you know, investigation he wanted to do of the 2016 election and of the Bidens. And of course, the committee also collected a lot of other evidence separate and apart from the hearings about phone records and such. So we expect that that's what's going to be presented. We will see how or whether President Trump's team decides to participate in this, as you said. They declined to participate in that hearing on Wednesday, mm-hmm. where several constitutional law professors came forward, but they did leave the door open to potentially participating in other hearings.
Well, reporters asked President Trump about impeachment yesterday. Here it is.
Impeachment might have on your legacy?
No, not at all. No, not at all. It's a hoax. It's a hoax. It's a big fat hoax.
Sahil, what's your sense of how President Trump is taking this? Democrats are looking at it as an historic moment. Is he taking it seriously?
The president is waging an aggressive campaign to undermine public support for impeachment, and it's not quite clear that is working. Shortly after Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced a few months ago the impeachment inquiry, polls moved pretty quickly in the direction of supporting an impeachment inquiry, and there's somewhere around 50% of the country now supports impeachment and or removal, and a little under that, probably in the usually in the low 40s, opposes it. But the country remains very, very divided. Mm. And one of the big questions facing Democrats that they're going to consider next week is what the articles of impeachment should say. Are they going to focus on bribery and extortion charges as it pertains to the president's actions in Ukraine? That's the one issue that unites House Democrats, or at least a majority of the House, in pursuing impeachment, or are they going to look at other issues like potential obstruction of Congress, obstruction of justice, and as some progressives want to do, a possible violation of the Emoluments Clause?
And Beth, that question is particularly relevant for moderate Democrats who are representing swing districts where President Trump is still pretty popular. How are they taking this?
Well, there's a lot of reporting that shows that Nancy Pelosi is very much in touch with those freshmen, the 40 or so freshmen who bounced Republicans out of their seats in 2018 and are potentially the most vulnerable facing re-election in 2020. And so far, you know, as we've seen, her main goal is protecting her House majority, and yet she is pushing forward with this investigation. She's certainly doing it on constitutional principle, as she says, but it's unlikely that she would press forward this hard without feeling fairly confident that her freshmen and her other members in moderate or swing districts are going to be okay, and that there's not going to be this massive backlash. Mm. That said, and I agree with Sahil, it really remains to be seen what the articles of impeachment look like and how broad they go, because there certainly will potentially be a bigger threat for some of these moderate Democrats if the impeachment proceedings just sort of are like a massive throw the kitchen sink at President Trump. If it's a little bit more surgical, perhaps that would be a little bit easier for them to sell in their districts.
Sure. And speaking of Nancy Pelosi, there was this kind of remarkable moment yesterday when she was at a press conference and a reporter asked her if she hated President Trump. She turned back to the podium. She was walking away. And then she said this.
And as a Catholic, I resent your using the word hate in a sentence that addresses me. I don't hate anyone. I was raised in a way that is full, a heart full of love, and always prayed for the president. And I still pray for the president. I pray for the president all the time. So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
Sahil, what did that tell you? Because I think this is starting to get a little tense, isn't it?
quite a remarkable moment. I will say I've covered Speaker Pelosi in some form or fashion and over the last decade in Washington, and I've never seen her that worked up.
Really?
That comment clearly, that comment clearly hit a nerve. And I think she was pushing back on this idea that it's personal, that she's pursuing something as grave and important and monumental as impeachment out of some kind of, you know, personal vendetta against the president. And she aggressively, as you just played there, pushed back on that.
There was another moment that was pretty tense, which was involving Joe Biden, one of the Democrats running for president, got a little angry at a voter at a town hall event in Iowa and called him a damn liar for saying that Biden and his son Hunter are as corrupt in Ukraine as President Trump. Here's Biden.
You said I set up my son to work in an oil company. Isn't that what you said? Get your words straight, Jack.
Beth, I mean, first of all, what do you make of that? And secondly, isn't he going to have to find a way to answer that question, which I'm sure is going to come up again if he's holding town halls without getting so angry about it?
Sure. I mean, it's never that great of an idea for an elected official or a politician seeking votes to yell at a voter or an attendee at their town hall. But, you know, one could take that a couple of different ways. One is that he was showing passion for his son and for his own integrity and credibility, which is what he's, you know, most trying to sell on the campaign trail.
Well, and people wanted him to fight back against this.
Right, right. And so there's certainly going to be a contingent of people who say, you know, right on, Joe, you know, good for you for, you know, showing some spine. On the other hand, he's sort of trying to sell himself as this, you know, stable guy. And you know, Republicans were, you know, quick to jump in on social media and, you know, frame him as, you know, unhinged and so forth. But look, I think the broader question is right. You know, how is he going to deal with this issue of the Republicans wanting to probe him and his son going into this impeachment? It's not something that he can just run away from. They're talking about, Republicans on the Senate are talking about calling Vice President Biden and his son as witnesses in the trial. It's just, he cannot compartmentalize and pretend that that is not something that's happening and that that is not going to be something that is being discussed while he steps into the 2020 race toward Iowa, New Hampshire as the front runner.
Sahil, Pete Buttigieg is getting more scrutiny as he surges in the polls. Elizabeth Warren wants to know who his financial bundlers are. Joe Biden is accusing him of stealing Biden's health care plan. Questions are being raised about his work for McKinsey, where he signed a non-disclosure agreement. And yesterday he gave an interview on NBC News about his struggle to win over a diverse group of voters and about his level of experience.
Well, look, every passing year in your life, you gain experience. And I believe that you need to continue learning each moment that you're alive. But I would also stack up my kind of experience from military service to executive leadership to what I've been able to do around the country and around the world among any of my competitors is something that prepares me for the presidency.
Sahil, what's your sense of how he's handling the pressure of rising in the polls?
Pete Buttigieg is certainly rising to the top tier of the Democratic race, and he's starting to get the kind of scrutiny that top-tier candidates get. The New York Times editorial board had a piece yesterday that was published online yesterday pressuring Pete Buttigieg to disclose who his clients were during his work at McKinsey and to talk about the kind of work he did after some reports about, you know, it came out about McKinsey partnering with ICE, advising them on the logistics of an immigration crackdown. And the Times noted that this was about 20% of Buttigieg's entire post-college career. He is only 37 years old. So he seems to be handling this in the way we know him to be. He's an even-keeled person. He doesn't get too high, too low. He doesn't easily get rattled. And to your point about his struggles with non-white voters, this is a very real obstacle, and this is probably his single biggest hurdle to climb. He is only at 2% in the latest poll of the Economist and YouGov with black voters, and that's a crucial constituency that he has to do better with if he's going to do, you know, if he's going to stay a top-tier contender after the first two states.
And Beth, does Buttigieg have something of an advantage going into January when you have what is it like five senators who are in this race who will be tied up for a long time right at the moment when the Iowa caucuses, they would be barnstorming through Iowa in order to prepare for that caucus in February. They'll be distracted in Washington with this potentially with the Senate trial.
Right. That could take Senator Warren off the campaign trail, Senator Sanders, Amy Klobuchar. No question that leaves the non-senators a little bit advantaged. But To Sahil's point, I mean, even if Buttigieg has, you know, a full free rein in Iowa to sort of build on the strength that we've seen him gaining in that first state, if he doesn't do better with black voters, it's game over. It's just impossible for a Democrat to win the nomination without the support of black voters, especially black women. And certainly Mayor Buttigieg is doing a lot of work to shore up his situation with black voters, but it doesn't seem to be bearing a lot of fruit at the moment. So even if he, you know, has got Iowa, you know, more or less to himself, maybe just competing with Joe Biden in January there, he's really got to do better with black voters, which is, of course, a big source of Joe Biden's strength and why he's in the lead in most of the polling that we've seen.
That is Beth Fooey, senior politics editor for NBC News and MSNBC, and Sahil Kapoor, who is national political reporter for Bloomberg News. Thanks to both of you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks for having me.